to advertise, email podcast@thisismatchy.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special edition of Podcast and Chill. Hang on, this isn't even a celebrity interview because you're a super chiller.
Yeah.
Which means more than a celebrity.
Yeah, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, does it pay as well?
What's happening, JR?
Thanks, my brother.
Yeah, I'm good, man.
Yeah, I think I used to be a celebrity. I'm not a celebrity anymore. I used to be famous. Now I'm not famous anymore. So I'm famous for used to be famous.
Do you remember the first time we met?
Tell me.
Because there you were really famous.
When was that?
You came to Y to do an interview.
Yeah.
For the Urban Express.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had the biggest song at the time, Khatalidna.
Yeah.
Khatalidna.
Definitely.
Yeah. So you walked to the studio fucking with your goons, acting like a superstar.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, hey, JR's a superstar. One song.
I never had goons, my brother.
You did.
Me?
Yeah.
Sheesh, I can't remember that. But it was probably like my team. Like I had a personal manager at that time. I had a business manager. And then probably an assistant as well, like, and then I had a videographer.
In 2008, you had a videographer.
Yeah, definitely. Jeez. I mean, I've got videos from when I was freestyling with, you know, and performing in different spaces with a cheese cop. The only time I had a cheese cop is in 2008 and 2009.
Yeah,
that's when I had a cheese cop. So I've got videos on the internet. You know?
We pretty much started the same time, like our careers.
Yeah,
because mine started around that time.
Yeah,
who did you start with, like, in the game?
I came at a very weird place of the game. So I was coming into the new school of what became the now, like, AKA era and the Casper on Your Vest era. Mm. And, you know, I don't like using just those two guys because the game is bigger than them. But that's when I came in. But coming out of a squatter camp era, coming out of a ammunition era, you know what I mean? A WHP, coming out of the WHP peak era with like Omang, the Morafe era, coming out of that into this new one.
Mm.
You know, and that's why even like Khatalina was like, it had a crunk sound.
Yeah,
if you listen to it, it was crunk, but wrapped in Vinet.
Exactly.
So what Les and them were doing with like Motherland Josie, Crunk, Dozy, I was doing with Vinet. And that was just a way of like, obviously coming back and paying homage to the guys that I looked up to, with the Morafe guys and everything, but also tipping my hat to the guys who are running it at that time, which was Josie, Elias, and all of those guys who had that sound, Bongs and them, of the crunk sound. So it was a variant of the two. And that's why most people think that I'm older than I really am, because that's the era that I came in at. But also, like, I don't know. And we're the same age, so it's quite weird for me that people think I'm 50 or...
Yeah, and how did you get in the industry? Because I had never heard of you before Khatalina. That was the
How
first
will you
time.
Ever hear of someone when it's the first time? Did you ever hear of Zoom and Riz Matlisa before the song? I mean, come on. You know, so that was the first entry. So
had you been making music before Khatalina?
Well, that's like making music commercially.
Yeah,
I think you should ask.
Yeah.
But making music and writing music, yes.
For you real?
Know? Yeah. So I went to an art school, studied drama, and then I did music and music theory after school.
Okay.
Through the giant, like, University of Pretoria. But there was a choir in the University of Pretoria that was my choir. So when my friends had soccer and whatever, now I'd go to choir practice. You know what I mean? And originally, my mom took me to the art school to do music. But when I got to the art school, that music department was already filled. And my mom said, okay, you're good at drama, do drama. So my parents are very supportive. So my mother said from a young age, I think this was like 1998, and she said to me that, and you see, it's because that's because of 1998 that people
think I'm 50.
You know? So then my mother said to me around that time that I was in standard 4, and she said, look, I think when you go to high school, you should go to an art school. And 1999, when I was in grade 7, standard 5, she said to me, well, we're going to apply to ProArte, and that's going to be one of the schools that you're going to go to. And I didn't want to go to NSA because I just felt like, no ways, you know. It was a bit too rowdy for me. And that was in Pretoria. And Praate is the equivalent of that in Pretoria. And I went there to study music. And then the music department was jam-packed. And then they were like, look, but we've got availability in drama. And in drama, you can do musical theater. You can act, do musical theater, and whatever. Shit. And so in my spare time, we had like about 20 music rooms on campus. So in my spare time during free periods, I'd go to music rooms and play the piano. Every music room had a piano. I get there, play the piano, and I think my love for songwriting and started there. You know, so by the time I had to go to tertiary, I took a gap year. I think in 2005, in 2006, I went to Boston Media House.
Oh, you at Boston?
Yeah, yeah. Shit. The old one down Catherine.
Yeah,
the road. You know that one?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and yeah, Mo Flavor was my senior. Yeah. You know, quite ironically. And you guys had a show and a stint together.
Mm.
Your condoms and what and all of those things.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we did that. So I went to school 2006 at Boston. And then 2007, my mom, I was already making music, but yeah, not releasing it commercially.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my mom was like, yo, the school fees are getting a bit too hard for me. And funny enough, what a coincidence that at that time, I had met 37 MPH.
Oh, fuck, I remember him. And did he do the beat
yeah,
Khatalin?
Yeah, he did Khatalin. But he also did like 50% of Josie, and he did RJ Benjamin.
He was cooking.
He was a producer at Get It Rough. And this guy went to school at TUT. And when I met him, I met him in Pretoria.
Yeah.
So I said, how? 37. He said, no, I work for Get It Rough. I said, yeah, brother, whatever. You know, everybody works for Get It Rough or whatever. He's like, no, I'm a producer. I said, yeah, shut up, man. I don't know you. You know, I know Tasman.
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
DJ Cleo.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know Goofy. But I don't know you. You know what I mean? He's like, no, I'm a young guy. I'm working with Josie. I said, ah, get out of here, you know? And that's how we met. And we started recording in Edenvale at the studio. And in 2007, I think, which was a happy accident, I dropped out of school because my parents couldn't afford to pay the fees anymore.
Oh shit.
But I was like, mom, I've got an opportunity to record. And because she had always been supportive of my music career, she was like, look, you're going to be good at it, and if that's something you want to do, then do it.
Mm.
And then I started recording, and that's the year that we recorded Khatalin in 2007.
Mm.
And we dropped it, I think, early 2008. So,
and the impact of that song is massive, ne?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it was a big record. It did what a lot of songs at that time couldn't do.
Mm.
I remember we went to YFM
yeah,
to share the song with Lee Kasumba. And Lee had a show with... Who did she have a show with again? Was it Thomas, I think.
Yeah, Rude Boy.
Bad Boy T. Yeah.
Lee and Sons.
Yeah. So she had a show with them. So I got there, and shout out to Thomas, and shout out to Sansa, shout out to Leah as well. And you know, got there, we dropped the song with Lee, just say, yo, listen to the song. They were on air at the time, and I remember they were doing like afternoon, like 12 to 3 or something yeah, like that. Dropped the record with them. She played it like in studio, you know. But Monday, the late yeah, DJ Monday, rest yeah, in peace, he was doing the playlisting
yeah,
with Clive, with
yeah,
C-Live.
Yeah, with C-Live. Yeah.
So Monday was the playlist manager at Y. Mm. And he heard this while he was doing the playlist, and he came into the studio. What's that? And Lee was like, no, it's this new chair. I said, no, give it to me now.
Yeah.
He gave him the CD, put it in, and literally... We chilled a bit at Y for about 15 minutes. We left Y. Literally, when we left Y, we're about to get on to jump the highway from Glenhove towards Edenvale. We're about to jump the highway. The record played.
Wow. That shit doesn't happen anymore,
bro. It doesn't happen anymore. Now you have to wait
yeah,
6 months.
Submit.
And then what?
Yeah.
Then brown pay. What? So, and then that was the beginning. And, yeah, and then we after that, man, nothing was the same. I mean, they played it. I think they had a record of the day or a hot joint or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And they just slotted that song in. And we got so many responses. Everybody was calling in saying, yo, that's the joint is the one, like Hot or Not or something. Like,
yeah,
yo,
yeah.
The joint is the one. And we knew we were onto something. And that's kind of how it started.
So what do you do? You're a songwriter. Do you play? You produce? What do you do, actually?
I don't know. I do a lot of things. From a music perspective, my skills are songwriting, record producing,
okay,
and composition. So, melodies, writing lyrics, making the production. I don't like to produce beats anymore. I just feel like it's too time consuming. And I think it used to be a passion when I was coming up because there was no one to make my beats for me.
Yeah.
So I'd make my own beats on Fruity Loops, like 2004, 2003. I'd make my own beats and then I'd rap to my own beats, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the last composition I made, I can't remember because I've worked on so many, but the last one I did, I think, was Bob Mabena with Spook Matambo and myself, and then before then, I think it was Outiam by Yanga, produced by myself and co-produced by PH and stuff. So, yeah, I just don't have a passion for it anymore, for beat making, but I do have a big passion for songwriting and record producing.
Okay, so songwriting, which songs did you write?
A lot, and you know, and this is a big conversation that came up where guys are like, "Oh, you wrote this for AKA, you wrote that, and you wrote that," and you know, what people don't understand is that songwriting is a collaborative effort. You know, even right now, you know, I'm still writing records, you know, for different people and different artists.
But who are you writing for now?
I don't like to say who. You know,
why
artist,
is that so taboo? Like, why can't you just say you wrote it?
Because if it's not a hit, then I don't want my. It needs to be a hit first. Then I can say, I mean that. So yeah, but I mean, I've co-written with a lot of people, man. I've written with AKA. I've written with Anati. I've written with.
Okay, let's start with Anati. Which songs did you write with Anati?
We wrote a couple, actually. We wrote Deny. Don't Deny It. Yeah.
Don't Deny It, okay.
Way Up. We actually did that for Dimples. And then I recorded a guide for Dimples. So I wrote the Way Up part. Think I'm having a favor.
Oh, yes.
And it was supposed to be someone else. So Dimples just came to me to write the record.
Yeah.
And then so what I usually do when I write is that I'll write the lyrics and I'll record the guide. Because I believe like it's very good to lead an artist melodically.
So it's like a skeleton.
Yeah, it's a skeleton. Okay. Yeah. Send it to D, and he already knew that he wanted Casper on it and someone else. And then he came back, he said, "How about we do this song with Casper, you know, and keep you on it?" And I was like, "No, but D, that wasn't, you know, the and plan. Even that guide is very, like, no, we'll come back to the studio, we'll record it, we'll do it again." And then we did that, and Anati had composed it. So, and then Anati came back and said, "Look, he wants to write, you know, he's producing a couple of projects," and we wrote a song called Soze for Manala and whatever. So we've done about 3 or 4 songs together with Anati. You know, and also in like rock fraternity, hip hop,
rock,
Afrikaans rock, my brother.
You lie.
Yeah.
Who did you write for in Afrikaans rock?
Afrikaans rock, Devils Fantasties.
You wrote for them.
Yeah, yeah.
In so Afrikaans.
Yeah, well, melodically and some lyrics Afrikaans. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, so melodies and some Afrikaans lyrics and you know, so even on the last album, Okay, I did it quite extensively, like a lot of work on that.
Yeah.
And then before that, there was another album that we worked on quite together, and we flew to Cape Town. We were in Stellenbosch, and we wrote in Stellenbosch for like about a week or so.
Dude, you're a musical genius, bro.
I wouldn't say that, bro. I just, you know, it's if you studied something and you know it very well, you don't even see yourself as a genius. I just know it really well. You know, I've always said that. I even tweeted it, that, you know, being a CEO is not a title. It's knowing your business end to end. You know, if you can't speak about music as your own CEO and speak about the industry and speak about what it is you do, then you don't really know the business end to end, because the business starts with the writing, the business starts with the production, the business starts with the melodies, you know. And for me, that's the most important part.
How did you meet AKA before you guys started writing together?
So it's a funny story. So I met him while he was still with Ivy League.
Okay.
Yeah. All with right. Kamu and Books.
Kamu the Kamu from Kids Presenter.
Yeah, the Kids Presenter. Hey. Then went to
what was his name?
Yeah.
I remember him.
Hey man, these red cups make me feel like I'm drinking alcohol.
You are.
And it's like 11.
We're rocking great Joe. Man. How does it taste? Right.
Honestly, I'll have Grand Joe like after this. Yeah. Right now I'm having chocolate, but I'll have it after. You're drinking Grand Joe.
Yeah.
I'm drinking.
Oh, tonic. You're drinking Dash.
Yeah.
You're gonna kill Dash.
I'll have it after. Okay. I'll have it after, I promise. And I'll give an honest review.
Yeah.
So I met him at when he was working with Ivy League. And I actually went to get a beat from them. And he had actually written a song called Young, Black, Rich and Famous that I put on my album Colorful. And he said, "Yo, we have this beat," and they sampled Jamiroquai.
And he wasn't big at that time.
No, he wasn't big. That was end of 2008.
Yeah.
He wasn't big at that time.
You the big star.
I'm the big star. You know, at that point. So I'm telling him, "If tech, I want the beat, you know. If tech, Ivy League, I want beat." So I'm sitting there, and it's an Ivy League at that time had done Pro, Bamba. They'd done a lot of shit, you know. So they were the guys to go to.
Yeah.
So I get there, SABC Studios. They were working from there. I said to them, I want to be Keenan plays me YBRF. Yeah, we young, black, rich and famous, and everybody in the state know what my name is. You know what I mean? So, and he's rapping the chorus, right? Yeah. And then he's like, yo, I like, this is the song I want to give to you, but they sampled Jamiroquai. And I said, you know, Ivy League, you guys, you do samples all the time. And sampling, it means you have to pay a certain publishing royalty to the original composer of the music. But Jamiroquai, you can't sample them, right? They're like the Beatles, and it's the Beatles, Jamiroquai. I think also Anita Baker.
And there's
whatever.
A lot.
But you can't, they don't, they refuse. You know, even Cher and whatever, they refuse to be sampled. And I said, we can't, I love the song, but I mean, we can't sample Jamiroquai. You know, we're going to get flagged. I'm going to pay lots of money. And AKA had this thing of like, no, man, we'll just release it. You know, he didn't care, you know. Like, my brother, I don't want to lose money too, because, and that was when we met. And I said to him, look, don't, I'll replay this thing. So I brought in some music guys to replay the sample so we can bypass the part. And I said, look, I'll feature you on the record. Because he had another bubbling under record. I think it was the first record that he brought out. Not I Want It All. There was something else before then. You know, he had another. And I was like, but I'm actually a big fan of yours, you know. And he was starting out. He was like, yeah, big fan of me, whatever. I said, yeah.
Did you see he's going to be a superstar?
Definitely.
You saw it?
I saw it so much. I took him on his first tour. So I said to him, you're a young man, lots of potential. Let's get on the road. And he said, really? I said, yeah, let's go to Durban. I had two shows in Durban, two or three shows. I took him with. And before I hopped on stage, he was doing the opening performance. You know, and that's how we met. And I just said to him, you know, let's go. So it was a professional relationship before it became a personal one.
Yeah.
It was a question of like, you're talented, you're a great young man. I think you'd be a good curtain raiser, you know. And today, the mega star. So, but I've always known how to see like potential and great records. So that's how we met.
Because that's what happened. I heard you saw MT and you wanted to sign him at that famous night at that club.
Cantare.
Cantare.
Yeah.
Is that a true story?
Yeah, that's definitely true. So what happened was, I was recording Deny with Anati.
Yeah.
And Milkshake was in the studio. And Milkshake said, yo, man, there's this boy. You got to see him. But he's got this song. Let me get the song. So he spent about an hour calling people, trying to get the song. Yeah. Not everybody had Roll Up.
Yeah.
So he's calling every single DJ he knew, trying to get Roll Up. And eventually someone sent him the record and he played it for me. I said, who's this guy? He said, it's MT. I said, where can I find him? No one knew. Milkshake didn't know. They said, but he performs at Cantare. I said, no, but I need to find him before Cantare. You know? So I searched around and someone eventually gave me his then manager's number. You know, some guy with dreads, long dreads or something. So I said to them, let me come see you. They said, no, we're in Joburg. I said, okay, fine, I'm coming to Jozi. So I drove to Jozi, parked my car and saw in the middle of Joburg, like somewhere, you know. And I walked to the thing. It was a dilapidated building.
Shit.
It could fall down anytime because it was built by Jan van Riebeeck. That's how old that building was. And I walked up the building. The elevators weren't working. They were on something like the 6th floor or 8th floor.
What is this? Is Ponte?
No, it wasn't Ponte. It was another building. But you know, Josie's like, every building is Jerusalem. Like. So I walked in that building. It was quite disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, the conditions weren't great. It, you know, it smelled, you know, guys were urinating on the tiles and whatever. You could see, like, at some point it used to work quite well, but now not anymore.
No one cares.
So it's like a trap. It's like a trap house. It's like where you can literally bump into like crack fiends. It's that kind of thing. So the lights are off. It's not a good place to be in. So I get to this place. It was written Doctor Mang 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 Mang, you know, but the niggas are in there. Doctor Mang Mang, what is that? So I walk in there. There's like four guys. There's like weed smoke everywhere. It's a very tiny room, like a booth. And Raf is sitting there and he's working on the beats. And MT and his guys are just smoking.
No way.
And it's full of smoke. So I get there. I just parked my car down the road. I walked into this building. There's piss and shit everywhere of the stairs of this building. But I walk into this musical paradise. You know what I mean? It's like the Chronicles of Narnia.
Shit.
You know, you open the door and there's like these geniuses at work. So I walk in and just see these guys, they're recording. And that time I say to MTO, man, I want to work. You know, so MT already knows me. He's, you know, and he says he feels very, you know, excited about it, but he's also got reservations.
What reservations were those?
They were running their own thing. So they had their own studio. They had their own thing going. They were making their own music.
But
they were managing
fucking
themselves,
JR,
whatever.
Dog.
You know, so he said to me, look, let's do it, right? So let's work on some stuff. So we had to have a meeting. So we walked into the booth. It's the size of a toilet. That's how small that whole room is. So we walk into the booth. It's three of us. We're squished in like this. Four. It's me. It's Raf. It's the other guy who used to manage MT. And then it's MT there. You know. So we're having this meeting in this booth. Tiny booth.
And you haven't heard Roll Up yet?
No, I've heard Roll Up only.
Okay. You've only heard
But
Roll
then
Up.
What I did was then he had a couple of songs on SoundCloud.
Okay.
So I said, I want to license Roll Up, Mama, and Ready. And he was like, okay, yeah, Mama and Ready, you can license, I'm good with that. But Roll Up,
nah, dog.
We have another discussion. So I said, okay, let's tentatively agree as gentlemen.
Yeah.
This is the gentleman's deal. He says, sharp. For Mama and Ready. But I said, I want Roll Up, and I'm willing to pay an advanced premium for Roll Up. But I don't work with I don't work with recording artists. I work with performing artists. So you need to be a great performer. And he was like, yo, I'm performing at Cantare on Thursday.
How much were you willing to spend on Roll Up at that time?
At that time, maybe 25,000. Well, but I mean, it was 25,000, and then obviously there were royalty conditions and points.
That would have been a good investment.
It would have been good for him. But I mean, so let me tell you what the thing is. So at that time, I'm working on Fifi Cooper's album. And Khosi from Ambitious had come to me to help him structure this business.
Oh, okay, Ambitious, yeah.
So I helped him structure the business, you know, from a business perspective end to end. And he then brought in Fifi Cooper to produce Fifi Cooper's a couple of songs. And that's when I put Questa on the one song, Punzu Nunu. You know, so the structure from there was like, yeah, we do need a couple of things. We need co-signs. She needs to be co-signed by the hottest rapper. So I put Questa on that record because there was guys give co-sign, and then she also had to have songs, whatever. So, you know, worked on that structure. And me and Khosi were going to go to
Cantare. Yes.
And I was publishing Lunatic at that time, the producer who did Karakara. Yeah. You know, so we were responsible for his publishing. So he was signed to us as a publishing house. And I took Lunatic and Khosi, and we went. So Lunatic was producing for Ambitious.
Yeah.
So I took Lunatic. So because my business is like end-to-end music, there's the recording part and there's the publishing side of the business. I took Lunatic and I said, because you're my publishing artist, let me introduce you to Khosi. Khosi, this is Lunatic. He's going to produce your stuff for Ambitious.
Yeah.
So Lunatic became one of the producers for Ambitious. So we went to Cantare, and I wanted to see this boy, and he performed. And he did Roll Up, and everybody
lost their minds.
So when he left the stage, he came to come greet, because he saw me at the table. He came to come greet. And I greeted him, and I said, yo, boy, you're really dope. I think we've got one with that deal of ours. And he was like, all right, no, nice one, OG. Let's do it. So Khosi Mahumapelo is here.
Yeah.
So he looks at me and says, so I introduced him. I said, oh, this is Khosi. He's the head of Ambitious.
Ambitious, yeah.
Oh, he's like, oh, okay. But that time, Ambitious is no one.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever, you know, they've got Fifi Cooper and that's it.
Yeah.
I introduce him. So he knows the business, but I mean, you know, Khosi doesn't stand a chance against me and you know, my.
What I can bring in, yeah.
Hi, Khosi says to me, oh, nice to meet you. He's greets MT. Then he says to me, my brother, do you have 500,000 rand to invest in this boy to make sure he's a success?
Yes.
I say, my brother, all I have is
25,000.
He likes this song.
Yeah.
He says, oh, my brother, then don't waste his time.
And then he left.
So I was like, all right, cool.
That's how he speaks.
And then I said to MT, I said, yo, my brother, I feel like this guy can really do for you what I can't. Because yes, I can get you to a certain point, but you're already there.
Exactly.
You're already performing to sold out crowds at Cantata. You've got a hot record. You just need
to take it to the next level.
And this guy will do it. And,
wow.
And I created that interaction and the relationship.
Wow. Do you regret it?
I think I don't regret it. I think Khosi did a lot for MT. He without Khosi, MT's career, I don't think he would have had as fast of a trajectory.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one thing that you got to respect him for, and the whole Ambitious situation is the fact that they've really fast tracked artist success. You know, and like Chris Galakis used to say, Chris is a friend of mine who's also the owner of Electromode. You know, he used to say to me years ago that your music is not your music is not your business. Mm. Your music is your business card that allows you to get into doors.
Oh,
and start your business. So, and I think that's what Khosi did. He's given like artists serious business cards to walk into whatever room, you know, that they want. A meeting that'll take someone like you 5 years to get
100%
will take a famous artist 5 minutes.
Mm,
you know, because that guy just wants to have an, he wants to give this guy his audience.
Mm.
And I think he's done well for the guys. But yes, they've got little.
Yeah, what do you think about those allegations that he's exploiting them, not paying them properly?
Salaries.
Look, you look at every business has a different business model, okay. Right? So, and a contract is not cast in stone. A contract is a negotiation.
Okay.
I propose what I propose.
Yeah.
You say to me, I don't like this. Mm. I want to change. I say, well, I'm willing to. Then we have a negotiation.
Mm.
It's not cast in stone.
Mm.
The thing is, we're dealing with a lot of people in a country where people are facing stomach issues and stomach politics.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
So,
for instance, you're negotiating from an empty stomach.
From an empty stomach. Mm. So I probably could have maybe given empty something else that Khosi couldn't have, and Khosi gave empty something else that I couldn't have, right? But are we going to really take away from the fact that at that point, those artists were fine with that deal? You know, it was working for them. You know, because again, it's about understanding the business, right? Because remember that being a CEO of your music means understanding the business end to end. Right? So that's what we need to instill in artists from the beginning. Is that you need to understand your business end to end. Yes, you want to make music, but what goes into making that music? What are the different facets? And we're seeing that a lot of independent artists are starting to understand that right now. So yeah, the allegations, and there are those that, oh, he gave them salaries, whatever. That was a gift and a curse. Because if you don't have a salary, for instance, if you're a gigging musician and you're going through a corona time, there's no income, right? So if you're at Ambitious and you're getting a salary every month,
corona or not,
you are happy with that. I'm just saying it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the guys who are probably at Ambitious, maybe, I don't know if they're still getting salary. I don't know what the structure is.
Yes.
But they're getting a salary. They are living through these COVID times. And they are appreciating that model versus a time where we're out of corona. Now all of a sudden you want to change the terms of engagement.
Do you believe, know, in the salary model?
To some extent, I believe in it, because it's a, I need to think about what I'm going to say and say it properly, because I mean, things like this don't come back. I believe in a portion of it. I believe in this, like the stability part of a salary. I believe that if 1 month, you as an entrepreneur, you need to be willing to take the risk.
Yes.
If you can say, I'm willing to risk that for the next 6 months, I might not have a gig, I might not eat, I might not have anything.
Yeah.
But I don't want the salary. Mm. It's a condition you can put for yourself.
100%.
But if you are too scared of that risk, you will take a salary. You know? So imagine you, because as a business owner, you're also betting on this horse, right? I'm saying, I'm going to give MacG 50,000 rand a month, every single month, for the whole year.
Gig or not.
Yeah, gig or not. You know what I mean? That's 600,000 rand, you know, that I'm putting into you.
But if I have the biggest song in the country, it's not much of a risk.
But yeah, definitely. But then you start saying, okay, I don't want 50,000, I want 150,000. Right?
Negotiation.
Negotiation.
Okay.
You see, so I don't think the problem was with the salary. Maybe the problem was with the amount of the salary.
Yeah.
You understand
the
what
amount.
I mean? Maybe the amount was the issue.
Not
necessarily the deal itself.
Oh, I get what
because
you mean.
Because I could risk 150,000 rand every month hoping to make a decent return and then not make that return. Because the truth is, sales, like streaming sales, whatever, it's not as it used to be. Right? TKZ was charging 50 G's a show in 1998.
Hey, you love 1998.
No, but I'm just saying. I'm just. These guys are charging, and I think there's something in my subconscious about 1998.
Yeah, what happened?
I wrote a song the other day, and then there's a line that says, "Feels like 99." How does it feel like 99? What were you doing in 99? It's not. Feels like. So yeah, maybe the problem was with the amount.
Yeah.
Because TKZ were charging 50 G's a show in 98, 99. They're still charging 50 G's a show. People are struggling to charge 50 G's a show today.
Yeah.
With inflationary costs and all of these things and change of lifestyle, everything becoming more expensive, artists are still struggling to charge 50 G's.
So I heard Khatalin, I'm like, one hit wonder, you know, gimmick, whatnot. And then comes Make the Circle Bigger. Fucking hell. How big was that song, bro? Because I believe like everyone in the country knew that song, eh? Make the circle bigger.
It was an anthem, man.
Yeah, it was an anthem, though.
I believe it's Brenda Fassie. It's Mandoza. it's PJ Power, Vicky Simpson.
Yeah.
And then it's myself.
With what?
No, just there's a commonality there somewhere.
Oh, in terms of impact.
Yes.
No,
like
crossover.
Oh, crossover.
Yeah. The impact of crossover records.
Yes, yes, okay.
Vulindlela, Ngalagata, my Ngalagata,
yes.
Show them.
Make the circle because falls under those, names.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yes,
so
yes,
so in the
true.
History of South African music, I mean, like, let's go again. Maybe we'll say Juluga. You know what I mean? And then we'll say Brasipo Hot Sticks Mabuzi. You know, but you can count Show Them in those songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm like 10 songs probably.
Shit.
So I think it was a.
How did that song come about? Because is that even hip hop? What genre is that?
It's like Bacardi House.
Bacardi House.
Bacardi meets like normal house. It meets techno synth.
You produced it.
Sticky produced it. So, Sticky Rapad.
Run me through that song. How did it happen?
Hey man, you know me. Like, I don't like. You know, I don't. Hey, Saul.
Yeah, I'm here, man. I'm here.
You're
I'm
late.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah. Last time I saw you, Saul, you were sleeping on couches at 5 FM.
Yeah. Hey. Small industry. You also know that story. Everybody knows that story.
It's good to see you, man.
It comes a long way.
It's good to see you,
Yeah.
Oh, man. And I love his contribution to the show. Saul,
thank you, bro.
You're amazing, bro.
Thank you, man.
I mean, he brought us Colin Fagger, so we will always thank him.
Really? Hey, so hey, you were into that interview. I saw him like, oh, buddy, like that's the first time I've ever seen you so committed.
I was in.
If there were no cameras, no
camera.
Yeah. No, not hers.
Oh.
It's an international post.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now give my what? $100.
I don't know. I doubt it's $100. I doubt. She gets sure like random $700.
No,
just
but
today.
I'm sure you asked how much for what?
Yeah?
You just ask her how
it's confidential.
Much? Oh, all right.
No, they did a trade exchange.
Okay. But it's her pay slip. You know? It's her pay slip. It's confidential.
I'll bring you to the show if you let me rock. I saw that.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah, so back to make the circle big. Yes.
Yeah, so I wrote this song and I was somewhere.
Yeah.
So Vela wanted to just like write something. So there's different versions of like how this song came about,
okay.
The story came about.
Yeah.
So I've got a friend of mine who says, no, me and my cousin used to say it to you all the time when we were around, and you said it would make a great song.
Mm.
And you wrote a song about that. Mm. Then there's a version where I went to Roxy's in Melville for a party, but I went on the wrong day.
Okay.
And when I got there, it was a party for an event called a C4 party.
Oh, see, the colored
party. The colored party,
yeah.
And I got there was a C4 party. I said, no, but I don't know anyone. Yeah. That was that. But I'm seeing everybody's moving, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they were just doing this chant, you know, make this a
good beat.
It was a big color chant.
Oh.
Right? So then I was like, man, this song could work, you know. So
wow.
I'd already like in my head, like written this verse. When I go to Easter to see my Honda, you know.
JR is my nigga.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's how the chant goes. Make the circle bigger. Make the circle bigger. You know, and then I don't think there's a JR is my nigga in there, but it just says show them.
JR
is my nigga.
Oh,
JR
is. Yes, because when colored people does, they like to make the circle bigger. Circle,
yeah, and then but all black people like to do it's a black thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so. You know, so Sticky was working on this joint, you know, and like, if you listen to that, it's got a, like a Bujo Mujo kind of.
Bacardi
kind of vibe. Mm. So he was like, the only person I know who can rock to something like this is Jay.
Mm.
And he was producing this song at Jabba's house, at WHP's house.
Mm.
So they call me and they say, him and Jabba call me and say, yo, man, we've got this beat, but we don't know what to do. So we want you to come write.
Mm.
So I said, okay, cool. So I get to the studio. Vele, because my pen game is...
It's lit.
Guys want me to come write.
Yeah.
I'm there. So I get there. I hear this beat. Jabba's like, no. You know, I think you must get on the song.
Your impression's on point.
So I'm like, okay, so the beat is happening, right? So I'm like, okay, no, fine. So I'm like, hey, man. What's this for? Who's it for? They're like, no, we're just working on beats, whatever. You know what I mean? So I say, okay, Steve, I want this beat. I want... Steve was like, no, but Jabba's like, no, but let's rock it here. You know what I mean? You want it, yeah, can have it, whatever, but let's rock it together. Let's collaborate and make this effort. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I say, okay, fine, let me get in the booth. So I go to Steve, okay, add the snare. You know, that's never. So we're going on production side and, you know, just working together. Jabba's rolling it up. So I'm in the booth. And I just start lacing this thing.
Yeah.
Make the circle be.
And then the chant comes.
Actually,
back.
No. I started with the verse. Mm. When I go to Easter, they see my wonder. Mm. Da, 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 you know, they're like, how I bring it down. Da, 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 get high. You know. And then it was like shit. Like, Jabba's like, oh fuck. Like, this could be something. You know what I mean? And I said, no, but I'm not done. I've got a chorus.
Yeah.
Then I laced the make the circle bigger chorus. Yeah. Then it was done.
Yeah.
And then Jabba's like, no, this song is finished.
he didn't want no smoke.
No, he said, this song is finished. Yeah. That one. I said, no, it's Jabba now. You need to hop on.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? I said, no, you need to go in. You know, but he's writing. You know, but he already heard the verse.
Yeah.
So I think he was like, hey, you know, you already heard the verse, whatever. And then he comes in and says, writes the verse. And then he laces the second verse. Reluctantly so, but he comes in and he laces it. You know what I mean? And it's a smash.
Mm. Wow.
And then he says, no, but we're missing something. It's like, yeah, we need a bridge. Jabba was a master arranger.
Mm.
If there's one thing Jabba was a master arrangement. Mm. Even with bands, like, it was just crazy.
Mm.
And he was just like, no, we need something. We need something that people will sing. You know, go to festival and whatever. And I was like, what? And he was like, yo, we love it. That's why we make the
circle bigger.
You know,
bigger.
I was like, so Jabba said, okay, fine. You know, do that. So I said, no, you record that.
Mm.
And he's like, okay. So he went and he recorded.
That's him.
Yeah. And then I was, no. So he went and recorded that. And I said, no, but he's like, no, but I don't have that thing.
You know, okay.
I mean, we need that. We love it. That ghetto thing. Ghetto fucked up. I want, I got an air sharp. Let me go in. So I go in, I record that. And we had a smash. And so I said to Jabba, look, what are we going to do with this record? You know, because it's, you know, I want this beat. Mm. You know, and now we have this record.
Yeah.
So we're having those tough conversations, you know. And then he said, look, let's jointly. You know, you put it on your album, on Colorful.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it on my album, Dumela.
Yeah.
And if you listen to Dumela, that song didn't fit anyway. Dumela, I don't know if you've heard Jabba's Dumela, but it didn't really sit anywhere. Yeah, but because we made an agreement to say, yo, you put on yours, you put on yours, and, you know, and that's how we rock it. And yeah, and then that's how we got the smash.
To be honest with you, I never liked that song. I thought it was noise. I'm like, hey, this song's pop.
Nah, dog. What can we say, my brother? I never liked your podcast. You brought all in fake.
Weak. Fuck. Out of all the songs you've written and co-written, like, which one's your favorite, man? Which one do you like? Fuck, yeah, no, I killed it on that one.
I don't know, man. Like, my songs are like my babies. You know, I feel like every song, like
not deserves. Even congratulate me.
No, not even congratulate. And I mean, like, remember, so what happened even with Levels was Keenan came to me, he said, because I had just done Cool Forever, my album Cool Forever, and he came to me and said, I want the exact same album.
Wow.
With an AKA name on it.
Oh, wow.
You know, and so going into that, I had already written songs of that nature.
Okay.
From the previous album. You know, so he had he wanted to mix house and hip hop and all of those things. But I mean, my songs are like, you know, like, they're all my babies. Like, I feel like I love my writing style. And it's like football, man. It's like, if you don't practice, you don't get any better.
100%.
Yeah, so I write all the time. You know,
Congratulating Me is beautiful.
It's a great record.
You did everything on that song.
No. So I mean, Keenan wrote the verses that he wrote. And, KG from Morafe. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I know KG.
Yeah. You know him,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote, do you see what it took?
Oh, that's him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you see when you look in the mirror? He wrote that. So it was a big collaborative effort. You know what I mean? So, and I you got to respect Keenan for that, because songwriting, as Beyonce has like
100
songwriters.
Yeah,
like
Justin Bieber. About,
so you can't expect AKA not to be as big as he is alone.
Is it true Young Achieve wrote for him?
Yeah, Ranga Chief a songwriter.
Oh, okay.
But guys, don't say wrote for.
Oh.
Like, say wrote with.
Wrote with.
I think it's very, don't take away the artistry that is AKA, or that is an artist or a writer.
Yeah.
You know, from a writer's perspective and an artist's perspective, he's probably top three of guys that I know, you know, who are great fucking writers. The thing is, again, he understands that he can't get there alone. That he needs other people, you know, to help him get there. For instance, like even Mame, Mame, you know, Yanga wrote the lyrics, you know, I wrote the melodies and performed the melodies, and that song was supposed to go to Java.
Java?
Yeah, so I sent the Gulula, Takumbula, Jacob Zuma, Tabumbe, you know, that joint. And Java wanted to record, and I think Keenan was just unavailable.
Shit.
And Keenan just took my guide lyrics and he put them as the final lyrics for the album. And
shit.
So the as a songwriting collective, I think we've always been very strong.
All eyes on me, same thing.
All eyes on me. Yeah, so Keenan sent me the beat from Tweezy and he was like, Can you write something for this for a chorus?
Mm.
And so when I listened to it, automatically I heard something that went to a Jamaica or like, you know, like Tom
Caribbean
Tom, that was already there with the Jomanda sample that Brenda also used. You know, but for me, like, I heard, here comes the half step. Oh, my bad. I was going to say you hated my song. So I recorded that. Here comes the half step. And then I sent it to Keenan. I said, yo, this is the vibe that I think.
Yeah.
And he was like, fuck, I dig the vibe. I just think that I'll dig the Jamaican, you know?
Yeah.
But I just feel like this melody line has already been used.
Because
I think Don Jazzy had just done a song a year ago, 2 years ago, like with the same kind of like the half stepper kind of like vibe. And then he said, but we need to get someone who's as good for a Jamaican version like of something as this. So I was like, you know, look, man, a couple of months ago, you know, I met this young Nigerian guy who's an up-and-coming artist called Burna Boy.
Wow.
And
hey, he ain't up-and-coming anymore. He's not up-and-coming anymore. Oh, Burna Boy.
So at that time, I had just met Burna Boy through a guy called Asem. I had a song in Ghana with a guy called Asem and DJ Black from Ghana called Show Something.
Yeah.
You know? And they were shooting an advert for Glow, and they came to South Africa to shoot the ad here. So they took Burna Boy from Nigeria and I think it was Tiwa or Savage or something, and they took Burna Boy and Asem as the two young guys from Ghana and Nigeria. So they obviously had a little relationship together, like, because they were young guys coming into the scene, and they kind of like sparked it up. So when I went to go see Asem, he was staying in Hyde Park. He said, yo, I'm actually chilling with some guy called Burna Boy, you know. I said, no, let's meet the homie, you know. So I came into the hotel, they were sipping Hennessy, and here's this young boy with like a cut, you know.
Wow.
You know, and with a voice like that, you know. And I was like, shit, like,
this is fire,
you know. So I remember we were going to studio, so I called, I said, no, let's roll to studio. So Burna Boy, myself, and Asem got into my car and we drove to PH studio. This is like 11 p.m. at night. So we're going to PH studio to go record. PH is like, no, come through, man. I said, yo, I got some homies from Nigeria and Ghana. PH is like, ah, come through, man. We out here. I go to PH studio. When I get there, PH says, yo, we can't record.
It's PH Row, not DJ.
PH Row X, yeah.
Yeah, Row. Right. Not DJ PH.
He says, no, we can't record. MI is here. I said, but Chief, I called you leaving Hyde Park. You stay in Randburg. I called you leaving Hyde Park 15 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago. I'm here. Now you're telling me MI is here, which means MI wasn't coming. He just rocked up to your place. Now you want to sacrifice our studio session because MI is. And I mean, MI was a big deal at that time. You know, he's an OG. M is a real OG. You know, shout out to M. He's a real OG. And I was like, you know, it is what it is. You know, let's go. So now I'm with Burna Boy and I say, and Burna at that time, you know, very arrogant, you know. He's the nasty C of Nigeria at that time.
Yeah.
Understand? So we get in the car. So Burna's in the car. He's rolling it up. He's like, so PH, we're driving out now. Say, fuck it. We're going back to, we're going to go write music at the hotel in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
PH calls about 5 minutes later. He says, yo, how far are you? I said, no. We're like driving to Hyde Park. He says, no. Yo, MI wants to do a joint with Burna. Come back. Because PH didn't know who Burna Boy was. But MI knew Burna Boy was. I said, yo, Burna, M wants to record. Burna said, no, we're not going back. We're not turning back. I said, what? He said, we're not turning back. Because I think at that time, he had just felt like I took time out to come to the studio. Exactly. And then you want to
disrespect it. Yeah, disrespected.
So I said, "Hey, Burna Boy doesn't want to turn back. Sorry, brother." Hung up the phone. So we left. So so I said to Keenan, "Look, you know, I met Burna Boy. I have a relationship with him. No one really like knows who he is in this territory, but we can get him. You know, so PH, please send the instrumental along with the guide to Burna Boy." And PH sent the guide that I recorded and the beat to Burna Boy. And yeah, the rest, as they say,
fucking hell, that song.
Yeah.
Classic. Yeah.
Smash.
You.
Apart from your verse, what else did you write on the song?
Shit.
On All Eyes on Me.
Yeah.
No, that was it. That was just my verse. Yeah. That was just my verse.
That was dope.
Yeah,
so, so since you closed with AK, what did you think about what happened with Nelly and all that stuff?
I think it's tragic. I think it's not a situation that should happen to anybody. I think losing a partner through a breakup and Jay is tough. You know, now when you lose them, like lose their life, it's a challenging one, man. It's a tough
situation. Did you call him? Did you meet him?
I mean, I gave him some space for about the first week after it happened. I sent messages through common friends. So the guys were there. And the only time I actually spoke to him after that was the day of the funeral.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you know, what's done is done. You know, baberekile, baphetile. You know what I mean? Like, at least there's some, you know, they must be feeling some sort of like, you know, they've given her a decent send off. And that's when I called him and I spoke to him. Yeah. But it's also the only time I could reach him.
Yeah.
So other times when I was trying to reach him, his phone wasn't on and I had to send message to like friends who were there with him and family and whatever. So, man, it's a tragic thing.
Had you met Nelly?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had met before. We were out the week before. I think we were out with my woman and Keenan and his woman. We were at Rockets, I think, the week before. So I had met her a couple of times. I mean, I didn't have like as good a relationship or know her that well.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have been together in each other's presence for a couple of times.
Now, let's go to the piano wave. When do you start picking the sound up like and be like, hey, this is the new wave?
So the first time like I heard about the pianos was through a compilation called Amapiano Volume 1 that was released by Born in Soweto Records. Okay. So shout out to the guys at Born in Soweto.
Oh yeah, we fucked it up the other time. Remember we said, who did we say owns Born to
you
Soweto?
You said them two that owns Born in Soweto.
Yeah.
No, it's owned by Colin and Spiwe.
Did he used to work with DJ Cleo?
Yeah, he did.
Nah.
Yeah, so Colin is
DJ
owned,
or something.
Born in Soweto. Yeah. So so shout out to them because they introduced the sound to me.
Yeah.
Not to the game.
Yeah, yeah.
To me.
To you. Yeah.
It's all this thing. So you know,
all right.
So these guys, I heard it for the first time there, and it was a song by MFR Souls. No beat, no nothing.
No vocal.
No vocal.
They didn't have vocals at the time. Yeah.
Just beat.
Yeah.
I want
and piano.
And piano.
Yeah.
Hey. And then I was like, shit, this is really dope. And then I saw some guys who were like a piano duo in Bloemfontein. I was on tour with Aries. Whose tour is it anyway? We did Whose Tour Is It Anyway with myself, Aries, and DJ Slick. And we were performing in Bloom.
Oh, I've seen that on YouTube.
Yeah.
You were like the OG there in the back.
Yeah, I was the OG there with the young kids moving. You know what I'm saying? Hey, the OG was rocking shows, you know? So these guys. I was like, what? Behind the head. What? With the toenails.
Oh, which one?
This one is this one. You know? So I was like, yo, what's this? Then they were like, no, piano, you know, because also I had heard it from that guy. So that was what piano like was like the guy is playing solo on a keyboard in an organ sound. And you remember like those were like solos. You remember like old house songs only to have a solo. So that's kind of like where it was.
Yeah.
Then I was like, damn. I remember I was like, yo, man, I need to sign these guys. But damn, they're just performers. You know what I mean? They're not anything. You know, they're just performers. Not taking anything from them, but they're not songwriters. Then I was like, it doesn't make sense for me. And then that's the first introduction for me to the pianos.
So when do you meet Kamumpela?
I meet Jobe.
Jobe first. Oh, yes.
So what happens is I meet... So a mate of mine sends me this video and says, yo, we need to go to this party, because that was a video that Kamo and her friend were promoting. Mm. And it was just like, because like the song that was playing in the background and the way they were dancing to the song was like, yo, we need to go to this party. The song is thumping. They're in the car. They're just doing some finger movements. And, you know, they were like, yo, Jove, you know, this party. And I was like, damn, Jove's party is going to be lit. So we start tweeting about Jove's party. Say, yo, we're going to Jove's party. We're going to Jove's party. We don't know who Jove is. You know, going, and like, come crunch time. Now we have to go to Jove's party.
You tweeted,
now we tweeted going. So we meet at the robots at Bears Nodia on 14th Avenue, somewhere 14th Avenue.
Yeah.
Now we're driving to Jobes. Now we cooler box. We put that cooler box and one of the whiskey, the water. So we got Jobes' number somewhere somehow. So we said to him, yo, we're coming. And Joe was like, oh, no problem, I'll prepare for you, you know. So he didn't even have a VIP. He literally gave us like a section like this.
Yeah.
He just put like some tape around it and gave us that section. And it was a tent. The sound was cutting all the time.
But dog, did you tell him, dog, I make the circle bigger. Fuck you.
No, dog. Like, dog, this is from a guy. I've been in dilapidated Jan van Riebeck buildings with smelling like urine.
To
find MT.
Yeah, yeah.
So being in the middle of Soweto when the switches
are
cutting. No, where the switches are cutting and don't have a VIP is not a big deal.
Yeah.
My life was more at risk there from all the choleras and what I could have caught there walking down the stairs to go and meet MT. So yeah, so we're there, the song starts playing. Everybody loses their mind. Okamumpela is like a dancer, so you know, like it's all like she's just a dancer. She goes to Boston, you know, or wherever, and she, it's fine.
And you know what that is?
Onishus.
Braoni.
Yeah, you remember even on, I think even on Fresh's show, they used to like to call him a lot. Hey, Onishus.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, so I meet Jobe, and like, yo, you've got a good record.
Yeah.
And let's do a license on it. You know what I mean? Let's rock. And he says, all right, let's rock. Let's do it. But you see, piano is very complicated.
Okay.
So no, this song is not just mine. It's produced by Paul 6ix9ine.
Okay.
And we need to include him. So we go and include Paul, whatever, who's like a brilliant I'm a piano producer.
Mm.
Very good producer, you know. So we go in, we link up with the boys, whatever, and then we go
Jazzy Q owns the song, it's his studio.
Jazzy Q owns the song, it's his studio. But high level rights, I like that.
Yeah. You
know? High level rights, I like that, bro. He has the gold, makes the rules.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? So yeah, we go into studio, we record. So I say, you know, Jobe, bring that girl along. I wanna, because for us, I know from years of like A&Ring and working in the music industry what it takes to get a song on radio. I've never released a song and it not hit radio.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I know.
You got the formula.
That I have to get my song to radio. Okay. And one of the formula was like, we need a girl to sing or to do an Ama piano vocal, because there was no girls doing Ama piano vocals at that time. It was just niggas who were doing Ama piano vocals, you know.
So the formula is to have a girl sing
And that was how I saw Ama piano going. The transition was that, yes, there's a lot of dudes in the sector, but the beat is Sol.
No, don't worry, just one cough.
Ah, wear mask.
I've got two coughs left. Then I'm you can diagnose me.
You know, that's why I wanted to do the interview outside.
Yeah, yeah, they did say, yeah.
So
it's fucking a mess.
I'm about to cover my drink like we in the club. So my formula was that I feel at that time.
No, wait, I want to know the radio formula.
So at that time, I felt that, and this will show you where the Ama piano scene is today.
Okay.
Just remember.
Okay.
So let's go back then when Sukendeleni came out, 2018,
2019. Sure.
And I felt that there's too many guys. The sounds and the textures of the music are so heavy with that log drum that if you have too much male vocal on it, it doesn't stand out as much as like when you add the sweetness of a female vocal, you create a new texture.
Mm.
You know, the new layer that is much more palatable, much more commercially appealing.
Radio friendly. Yeah.
So I said, bring that girl along, because I think she's got a vibe, and you don't need someone who can sing here. You just need someone with the vibe.
Mm.
You need the vibe.
Mm.
So she came in and she came with Onishus.
Mm.
And I was like, hey, bro, Oni, this girl, that, yeah, and we spoke, you know, all those things. And then, you know, they recorded, and then, you know, we wrote the part, and then, you know.
You wrote the part? What do you mean you wrote the part?
Yeah, so the
oh, you wrote that.
Yeah. Jeez. So if you look, there's a video clip on YouTube. Mm. You must go check it out.
Okay.
On the making of Sugen Zeleni and whatever.
Oh, you know all right. What I mean?
Yeah. You know, and then yeah, to edit those textures, and that's the reason why the song became, like, I think much more commercially palatable. Mm. But fast forward 2 years later or 3 years later, how many women are on my piano songs?
Yeah, Bootle,
whatever,
yes.
Whatever. Do, do. Lady Do. Yeah. And the reason
Lady
is that
Do's killing it.
The reason is like the textures. Mm. They add a new texture to that heavy tone that exists in the piano.
Because as soon as Lady Do says something,
the tone, the song
changes.
As soon as Bootle comes in and says,
Sha.
You understand?
Yes.
So imagine if I was working for Universal or Sony, I'd be coining it right now, you know, with the artists I'd be discovering on piano and the records I'd be A&Ring.
So why aren't you working with
Haven't they offered you a gig? Yeah? Haven't those guys offered you a gig?
Yeah, plenty of times.
And why did you refuse?
The bag was not big enough.
No, it's not even about the bag, man. I'm an entrepreneur.
Cheers.
You know, like, I like starting things from nothing.
He's a master, not a slave.
Starting something from nothing, you know. But I mean, I do consultations for them. My business, Feel Good Music, consults for UMG. So, you know, because then we own our own time. You know, we can do what we want, and we can grow ourselves as a business.
So why don't you work with them anymore?
I mean, we had a 2-project license.
Mm.
The first one was Sugen Zeleni, and it's a product license. It's not a single or an album.
Yeah.
So whether you give me an EP or an album, or you give me a single, it's still the same applies.
Sure.
So we did Sugen Zeleni, and then they did Sounds from the South with Mpo 6ix9ine.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's a project that they did. And the reason, you know, you don't know that project is because, you know, to some extent, I felt like, the boys weren't listening. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and it goes to that. Like, they wanted to do their own thing, and like at Feel Good Music, we're very big on giving people freedom.
Sure.
You know, but also when we advise, we expect those, you know, advisory, you know, words to be seriously considered. And I think they really were like, no, Jay, we understand the landscape. We know what they
so
want.
So they thought they made it. They don't need you anymore.
No. Not that. They just, you know, they knew what their market wanted. Because I also didn't know what their target market wanted.
Because
I'm not a piano target person.
100%.
Right? So I trusted them with that process. But there were also things that I felt I wanted. I mean, I put Vocalistic on their album and what. So they did Sounds from the South, and then, which was their EP, and then they finished. Then they finished with the deal because, like, it was just that quick. So
where are they now?
Jobe is around. We're actually speaking to. He's got new management.
Okay.
And we're speaking with them because we were just tying up some other stuff, some other loose ends. So he's around. I think he's got a new song out.
No one knows about it.
You
must come back home, kumble guy.
I mean, look, you know, strategies and directions change all the time. So maybe he's going in a new direction. But remember, we don't sign artists, right?
Yeah.
So we license the record.
Yeah.
So we have a license on Sugen Zeleni for 3 years.
Oh, shit.
You know, the license comes to an end this year.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
so okay. It's not like we're holding on to artists and giving it 10 years.
How do you make money from
whatever?
That?
We take a percentage. And the artist takes a percentage.
From what the song makes?
Yeah, from what the song makes. Take a percentage and the artist gets a percentage.
Oh.
Yeah.
But songs aren't really making money that much. It's performances now.
Yeah, then you come into, you have a management agreement as well.
Oh.
And the management agreement, you'll do something like that as well.
Oh, so like a booking agent.
Yeah, booking agent, and you know, it depends what your management deal constitutes of.
Oh.
But I mean, management requires a lot of effort.
Yeah.
It's not a place that I like to play in.
Yeah.
But music, you know, great songs sell themselves.
Yeah.
So once you get them in the right channels through the right pipelines,
it's gone.
Yeah.
So why did you ever license Kamumpela's music or anything?
No, I didn't. I didn't. Look, initially we wanted to take her on after that. Because we saw some like star quality in it, and there was something happening there, you know. But like, just the way she was conducting things for me didn't work out well. You know, I mean, for instance, we sent her what we call an, I want the right term, man, featured artist agreement.
Okay.
Because you have to have a featured artist agreement as a featured artist to discuss from what part of the actual copyright are you entitled to a percentage as a performer on the record.
Mm.
And we never got that agreement back, you know, and that agreement sat with her. I sent it to her via WhatsApp. I sent it to her via email. We never got word back. We never got any changes, you know. And I mean, I saw a tweet the other time, like a while ago. I think it was after your interview that you did with her. And someone was asking me, you know, that there was a clip that they shortened.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, but Jay, why? What? The truth of the matter is that we wanted to take her on.
Yeah.
we pursued her. Mm. Yes, we gave her calls, wanted to manage her, but we never really got the response we needed, and she ended up going with another manager.
Yeah.
And the reason, like, she, you know, she'll say like, oh, but we don't, like, I haven't gotten this from Sugar and Dele and I haven't gotten that, is because we don't have an featured artist agreement. Mm. So how much do we pay? How long is a piece of string? You know what I mean? Like, you could pay for the next 30 years. Is that, you know, is that part of the terms and conditions that you've instilled? And you know, we don't know what your conditions are. You know, we don't know if the 3.5 or 4.5 performance points are what you want.
Yeah.
Are you okay with those? Or 17% or whatever. What, you know? So it's that thing. I just didn't like the way that business was conducted around that time.
Yeah.
And I was just like, maybe it's worth more than what it is, really.
But she seems to be doing really, really well now.
Yeah, no, I think she's doing well, man. I think, you know, it's, you can't, like I say, when you manage an artist, you don't manage the talent, you know, because the talent is there already.
Mm.
You manage the expectation,
you know.
And once you fail to manage that expectation, you fail to manage the artist.
Mm.
So I think, you know, she's doing very well. It's inevitable for an artist to do great.
Yeah.
If they've got, you know, the hunger for it, you know, it's just that some point you get a lot of money, then the hunger, you know, the ego starts like overpowering the hunger, and then it becomes something else.
Yeah.
But what, I mean, yeah, she's doing quite well.
What do you mean by manage the expectation?
So everybody's got an expectation of what they expect to get out of whatever business deal.
Oh, the artist's expectation.
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, you need to say, okay, this is the kind of thing we're going out to. This is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
This is where we're going to be. This is where you want to be in 3 years. We're going to get you in this. So you need to manage that. If ever you see that the one-year target is going further, you need to come back and say, hey, I know we had said 1 year, but it's taking a little bit longer. Let's make it 16 months.
Mm.
Let's give us, you know. So you're managing that. You're giving the artist time to adjust, you know, to the changes, you know, because guys fail to manage artist expectation. That's when artists feel like, but like now, you know, my management company is doing nothing.
Mm.
And it's not that they're doing nothing. It's just that you're not managing that expectation of what the artist expects to get from.
Mm. Oh, your song is pop.
Nah. Yeah, sometimes the song is pop. Sometimes the song is pop.
What do you feel about rappers like mixing hip hop and?
It doesn't feel like carte blanche, ne? I feel like my episode is slightly a bit more serious.
Nah, man. Like I just want to get in your head, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
I
want to
get in your head because I really like. For me, I really like the way you think and the way you conduct yourself and the way you see your view of life. You know
Thank
what
you
I mean?
Brother.
Like from your island. So for me, it's more about that. I mean, we can get into the sex shit. I mean, you know, that's easy. I mean, we lost Jeff sex. I mean, you know. did you have this morning? Did you get some this morning?
No, I didn't.
But I wanted to ask you, what do you think about hip hop guys fusing hip hop with amapiano?
I don't think anything of it. I think that's where the world is about that, bro. Like, you know, I don't want to preach too much because, you know, if I say too much and drop too many gems, then people won't buy my book.
Mm.
Oh, when it drops.
You got a book
on it? No, I'm saying when it drops.
Yeah.
Like, it could be like a book in 10 years or 20 years.
Yeah.
But when it comes out,
yeah,
it needs to be those stories. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Those Jabba stories, the whatever stories, the, you know, all these stories that I need to share. But,
clean.
I think music, you know, has become pop.
Yeah.
So we no longer, like, that's from my take, we don't look at hip hop anymore as a genre.
Mm.
We don't look at amapiano. We look at like pop music, like what is popping, what is popular, what is big, right? And because now you can't separate the two. Because if you look at the world, you know, the guys like Pitbull, you know,
yeah,
and guys like Flo Rida, at some point they punished rapping on, and they were number one on the charts.
Yeah,
but you know, you could ask
for years.
Was that hip hop? Was that house? Techno house? What was it? It was pop music.
Mm.
It's everybody wants to have a pop record. Everybody wants to have a popular record that's topping charts, that's playing on 947, Jagaranda, all the way to Metro, Ukhozi, Kakas.
Mm.
You understand what I mean? And that is only comes with the pop record. So I feel like pop is that's the way it is. It's a popular music thing.
Mm.
And artists will fuse and create and all of those because music has become very pop. And that's where we want it to be because pop is the most commercial.
Mm.
It means we're now on every station, on
we're
every
eating.
TV. Yeah, mm. Now we're eating nicely.
Mm.
This thing of like hip hop, you're only going to eat in hip hop. Understand what I mean? That's where you're going to eat. I want to eat everywhere. I want to eat in pop. I want to eat everything. Understand what I mean? So I'm okay with it. I feel like it's great. I'm not those guys like purists to say like, no, Nah, I don't mess with that hip hop shit.
Yeah.
That piano mixed with hip. No, no.
Yeah.
Me, I mess with it. That's what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything must have piano. And the piano dies. Then there's another somebody coming in. I'm a drum. Then when everything dies, I'm a drum. Till I'm a drum dies. It's a bull, dog.
Let's talk about your wife, man. How did you meet her? She's beautiful, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you for her.
Yeah.
Thank you for her. Yeah.
How do you meet her?
We met, and I mean, like, I need to clarify, she's not my wife yet. You know, I think it's very easy for guys to start dating someone for a couple of years and then start calling them their wife. My brother, having a wife is something else.
So it's fat and set.
It's fat and set. You know, it's fat and set. It's a loving relationship. You know what I mean? It's a family.
You understand? You said fatalin. Like, hey, fatalin.
I said fatalin. Let's get about it. Your fatela, babe.
Yeah.
So I'm a fatela.
I'm shy, lady.
So yeah. Oh, Kusha, I understand. Where's your sanitizer?
It's by the door. You see? There.
No, there.
Oh, we've got there.
Come on, my brother.
Come on, my brother. Observe protocols.
Casual.
So we met. What does casual mean?
There it is.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah.
So we met like a couple of years. Well, not a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And we saw each other briefly for a little bit, and then we lost contact.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, gradually, I think over the years, then we kind of like were back in each other's circles, and you know, through common friends and common people, and and we were like, yo, let's see each other for a little bit. Let's see what it goes to. And we saw each other for a brief minute, and we were like having, you know, like there together, like, and just like trying to see what can happen, you know. And then we wound up getting back together.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a full circle kind of like approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, she's obviously got her own thing and her own career and her own right.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got mine, and it's just.
Do you remember how the baby was conceived? Scar rasa busa riding.
Busa riding.
Busa food. I actually think I remember.
Yeah,
like, for real. It was the 31st of December.
Cheers. So
it was a.
Yeah.
3-2-1 pa. Literal. Literal pa.
You know?
Yeah, so it was the 31st of December, and we're in Joburg. We actually just came back.
Yeah.
So I think I remember. I remember that.
So it wasn't a mistake. Like, you guys planned it,
31, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. 9 months. And my son was born on the 22nd of September.
Yeah.
So my calculation is quite off.
And he was planned. No, it wasn't a mistake. Like, you forgot to pull out.
Nah,
or something.
It wasn't really like he was planned thing. But I mean, we're in a relationship, and I was ready to have a child, you know, and take care of the family. Like, I wasn't. I mean, at the first time, it'll come through as a surprise. Like, oh my God, we're having a baby. Oh shit, what? Like, yeah, really? Oh, okay, fine, let's rock. So I was ready. I was already at that point.
Yeah.
And I think I was also getting bored with what was happening in my life.
Mm.
You know, I was like, fuck, what?
You're getting tired of the groupies, isn't it?
What else are we going to do?
Mm.
You know, there needs to be another level of what life is about.
Mm.
And
did you ever mess with famous girls? Because I've never heard you like, hey, you're with Mang Mang or Mang Mang.
Ah, Joe, I just think I don't like it's not what my life is about.
Nah.
Like, I don't. I mean, my girl is quite famous.
Yeah. No, she's famous. But I'm saying before her, I'd never heard of anything about you with whoever. I almost mentioned the name.
I live in in my own world.
No, I was gonna say, I haven't heard you and Boiti.
No, stay away from Boiti. Nah.
What's wrong?
I'm Satan. Nah, man.
Oh, he's got issues with Boiti.
No, I love Boiti.
I've heard this guy mention it so many times.
Oh, I love Boiti.
Apparently, they've had a. What, Joe? Don't do that.
No, I love
Boiti. Boiti's a nice girl.
Oh, I love her.
Dope.
So we've. Yeah,
you've been there,
yeah. No, I haven't.
Oh,
no,
this guy.
No, I'm just.
This guy's rude.
I am rude, my man. And she'll never come to this podcast.
Nah, never.
You don't think so?
Forget.
You don't think so?
I'm not doing the show, yeah.
Have you tried?
Yeah? Yeah, I tried. I went to a music when she was launching the album.
And then what did she say?
She was like, yeah, I'm not ready. I'll let you know. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but also you're not on brand for her, my bro.
Exactly. You must choose your fights wisely.
I'd rather you're drinking from red cups. you're not on brand for both, my bro. Just stick to those ones that you know. Those ones,
no, but I love her, man. People think I don't like her.
I think,
but I love her, man. Yeah, we've said so many times on the show.
But I guess that's also what your show's about.
Yeah,
it's about, like, you know,
it's just banter.
Yeah, it's banter. Yeah. It's banter.
Nothing serious.
You know, very few people can take that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah.
So you never did any famous girls? Nothing.
I think. No,
give us one name.
We don't. Like, I'm not that kind of guy.
Mr. Kiss and Tell.
Come on.
Give us one name. It's happened.
Years ago.
It happened
anyway,
in 1998. Right. Come on.
1998.
Yeah, brother. You know. But also, you know, don't go waking the dead, my brother.
Yeah,
you don't do that.
You but you had your fair share.
Yeah,
you had your fair share.
I mean, dog, I was an artist, a musician, a rapper, traveling the continent, the world.
Yeah,
understand? 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 I remember once I had a tour in Norway.
Yo. No ways.
no way. You know, so it's like you meet a lot of people everywhere. You know, and there's people that, you know, you come to parts with who stay.
And so you've had some international pussy.
Who go?
You've had some international pussy.
No.
You haven't. Keep it local.
But even if I have, like, you think I'll tell you?
It's not on bread.
It's not on bread. You must remember that my shareholders and my partners are watching this thing.
Yeah. You'll tell us off.
You want them to remove me from my chair.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the app, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called Fiverr.
It's called Five.
Five.
I don't know where you saw an R.
Okay. Five, yes.
Yeah.
FYVE.
Must fire your producer.
Ask his.
Yeah.
FYVE.
FYVE. It's called Five.
We tried because we spoke about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you did.
I still don't understand what.
And everybody thought that we are competing to Apple Music.
That's what we said.
No, I said he's giving artists a platform to be like a distribution.
Yeah, so
on
we're digital aggregator.
Thank you. That's
we're a distributor. So we connect the artist's music to Apple Music.
The platform.
So you go through us to distribute to Tidal, Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, all of those. So we're the vehicle that transports the music from the creators of the music or the musicians all the way to the stores.
Oh, so you like Anchor. With podcasting, we use Anchor.
You use Anchor to distribute your podcast.
Yes, yes.
So something similar to Anchor.
So we go to Anchor. And then they distribute.
Then you upload your RSS feeds.
Yes.
And then RSS feeds then get distributed
to Spotify.
Yes,
iTunes.
That's exactly what we do.
Oh,
but the thing is, like, we don't do it. So the public do it. So the artists do it.
Mm.
So Five is an app. We're Africa's first smartphone distribution app.
Yeah.
So from your phone, you literally download the app like you do any other Instagram, whatever, and then you use that app to distribute your own music.
Wow.
So you'll be in there. You'll write, okay. It'll start with requiring like your artwork. Then you upload your brilliant artwork, you know, and then it'll say, oh, we love that artwork, you know. And then you, your name, then you say, no, my name is Saul, but my AKA is
S-O-L.
Yeah, whatever. So you put in all that stuff, you know. So there are about 4 tiers. We wanted to take you essentially 5 minutes to release your single.
Wow.
It takes less. We wanted to take 5 minutes, but it takes less. Because when we wrote it in a way that people will be able to understand. So you've got your artwork sector, which is your artwork. Then you've got your metadata section, which is like your name, your artist name, the track title, all of those stuff. Then you've got your distribution sector, which is like, where do you want your song to go? All digital stores. When do you want it to be released? I want it to be released on the 30th of July.
Wow.
And then you submit it.
Fuck, I just thought of an idea. Can't you do the same for radio?
No, we're actually doing the same for podcasts.
Ah.
So right now we actually, and you know, we that's something that we're looking at is to start distributing podcasts. So as MacG, you won't have to go through an Anchor anymore. You'd go
through
Five.
Oh, dope. Yeah, yes.
You know,
and other
guys would do the same. So,
oh, that's dope.
So I mean, you know, so luckily for us, we've got a very good development team. Our CTO, Lee's development team, is always on point, and we write the code from scratch. So we wrote the entire product from scratch. We didn't white label anything. We didn't license anything.
Wow.
We've been writing it for about 10 months now.
Mm.
So we started writing it from August last year, and we launched in June.
Who's we?
Myself and like, well, five, the business.
Oh, okay.
We is five, okay, the business. Okay, yeah. Okay. What, I'm not alone, right?
Okay.
What are the costs then involved for the artists?
We don't talk. Oh, no, for the artists, I thought you meant what are the costs involved for us? What did it take for us to do this?
Who wants to know?
I was in a like a marketing meeting yesterday with another company. I think I told you who the company was there.
Yeah.
And then they were like, when do you anticipate becoming profitable? you want a marketing partnership. You don't ask me about profitability. I try to buy equity. Oh, we can talk about that. Let me send you, you know, the finance model. So, yeah. I mean, like, we pay out at the same rate as DistroKids and whatever and TuneCores and all of those guys. The only difference with us is that we pay you. You withdraw your money to your own bank account. So all these guys are withdrawing through PayPal, and the only provider for PayPal is FNB, which means if you're banking with Absa, you're going to need to open an FNB account to be able to access the PayPal, you know, situation. We pay you. You withdraw your money directly to your bank accounts, to whether NetBank. I don't want to name names because this is your podcast.
I'm sorry. No, that's fine.
Yeah. So, but they must pay. Okay, I can get them to pay.
It's okay.
Oh, you're fine.
Yeah, we're right.
Okay. So we do. So we then distribute. So you do that. So even in five, you can be able to see your wallet. You'll see how much is in your wallet. So you'll be able to see there how much your streams, the revenue your streams has done. And then you withdraw your money, you know, to yourself.
So there's no, they don't pay you guys. So
they pay us a user fee. So it's 59 rand to distribute a single, 199 to distribute an album, and 599 to for a subscription base.
Yeah.
So, and you know, that's a once off cost that you're paying, and you're fine. I mean, if you look at any of our competitors in the space that we're in, guys are charging about $24 to release a single, you know, all of that stuff. That's a lot of money.
It
you
is.
Know, these guys don't understand the African landscape. That's why they want to pay you through PayPal because it works for them.
Yeah.
But we understand that as Africans, we want money in the bank. If it doesn't come from an institution of brick and mortar, it's not something that we're willing to look at. Don't tell us about Bitcoin, crypto, please. You're wasting our time. You know what I mean? Give us money in the bank right now. So we've also got a facility to pay unbanked individuals.
Oh
shit.
So that's the first of its kind. I mean, we're the first of our kind on the continent. We're one of four countries globally who are offering the service,
man.
So if you're unbanked, it'll take you maybe a week longer to get a payout, but we can officially start paying unbanked individuals.
How?
And we're always developing new technology to be able to.
So you pay them through what means then?
I can't tell you that. If I tell you that, my brother, you're going to have to you need to sign to five.
I'm not going back to five.
No.
That didn't work out first time around.
Fuck the ex.
So I mean, we pay through a commercial medium.
Okay.
You know, so we haven't instituted our payment gateway because everybody needs to. Like, we want everybody to be using Fire for free.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we've got a 30-day or 31-day whatever promotion. Everybody's just coming. We're distributing songs. Everybody's just coming in. We're distributing their music.
Wow,
all the stores,
man.
And they're available in Apple Music, etc., Spotify, Deezer, all these guys. You know, so we're gonna start instituting, and then we'll be able to pay through a facility where you don't have to have an account. You'll basically get a card. And you can then use that card to withdraw up to the amount of 35,000.
Wow.
Shit.
Yeah.
Shit.
But that's where we're going to cap the payments, because that's what we can pay towards. But we're always developing new technology. We're always working with new developers. We're talking to a blockchain developer right now. We have a big meeting with a blockchain developer in China to be able to see, you know, what it is like, how we can stabilize our payments and be able to, you know, pay all of these guys and even get paid by our clients without having to run through a commercial finance structure. You understand what I mean? And essentially even go to build a five coin.
Who knows?
You know, to say, well, you've got 20,000 rand in your streaming wallet. Five coin is gonna cost you 10 grand. You know, invest in this five coin and we can use that five coin. Then you can withdraw 10 grand, invest 10 grand in a five coin. You know, those are things that we're looking at. So from a tech perspective and a business perspective, we're always looking to innovate and grow. But our business is music distribution and aggregation.
You can tell where the Tropic money went.
Come on, that was ages ago.
So let me tell you, like, to give you context, that was ages ago, ne? And it was 1 million rand.
Yeah.
Ne? My son's school fees right now are 10% of that amount, and I haven't even put bread on the table. and I haven't even, like, we're talking just basic education.
Mm. Mm. Is he going to cure or where is he going?
No, so when people speak about, like, the Tropical Minor, I said, guys, I chowed that thing with McG. Even possibly with Saul. I know a portion of it I've chowed with Fresh. I mean, even when we were like, you know, speaking of Fresh, when I don't like Fresh, you know,
shut up.
Shut up. So, I remember when we were.
F you.
When we were in Thailand shooting the Tropical thing, we used to go out. So every night when we'd rap, we'd go out. We're there for like 12 nights or something like that. So 2 weeks. Every night we'd rap, we'd go out, you know. And Fresh would be like, so I'd be like, so he'd be paying.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Fresh, man.
Yeah. It's the big dog.
Yeah, but there's about maybe 8 of us. But he's swiping, my brother, drinking champs, everything. You
know? Oh, my man, don't worry, my man. Oh, I've got this.
I said, my brother, come on, you know, I need to help. My man, Jay, don't stress yourself. I've got this. I said, my brother. So, eventually I got quite guilty, you know. So by like day 4 or 5, I started being like, let me share bills. Fresh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
My brother, told you to worry.
My brother, that bill came, ne? I probably swiped that one bill. I had committed to swiping for the next 5 days. I'm going to swipe with this man. My brother swiped one bill. Maybe it was 80-something thousand. We swiped 50-50. Hey, I said, are you paying 60, 50, 80 every time? Is that what you're paying? So I was like, shit, this shit is crazy, dog. You know what I mean? So by the time I got to, let's say I got to Thailand, I was already in debt.
Yeah.
Yeah, because flying there, we stopped in Malaysia.
Yeah, you're chowing that money.
I don't remember, but I hadn't won it yet.
Okay.
I was already in debt.
Oh, yeah.
So we stopped in Malaysia. And, you know, I knew, I didn't know these places. We were in the mall in Malaysia. And Bonang was like, oh, my God, they have a Zara here. I didn't know what a Zara was.
Yeah.
Bonang is teaching me this. Oh, they have a Zara. You don't know what Zara. They are, buy now. They don't have this thing at all. Now I'm buying things. I don't know what I'm buying. I'm buying this. I'm buying a jacket. Because when I get home, this is something. Hey, you don't have this one. As I walk out of that mall, there's Tiffany's in the corner. At the shopping at the mall in Malaysia. Tiffany's a jewelry store.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh no, man. I want that powder blue box from Tiffany's, you know? And I'm like, yo, because Bonang and Bukanyo, man, they went to Zara and they're buying an H&M and Loiso Gola. You know, they know these things. I don't know. I come from Atresville, my brother. I don't know these things. You understand? But I say Tiffany's is something that I know very well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because of, you know, the song Breakfast at Tiffany's and the movie as well and whatever. You know, so I was like, I know Tiffany's. And I know if I get something from there, that's like straight up quality.
Yeah.
I don't know those ones, right? But I know the quality stuff.
Yeah.
Understand? So I go in and I buy a ring, a platinum ring at Tiffany's for myself. So everybody's waiting in the bus for me. And when I pull up with the Tiffany's bag.
Yeah.
My brother.
Clean.
Even Bonang looked at, I'm sure she looked at me that day, said, you wanted to give me a car. You got it, you know. So by the time I got there, and I mean, I bought a watch at the airport, whatever. So by the time we actually got there, I was already in debt.
Yeah.
Maybe 300,000 rand in debt.
Damn.
On our way there. Yeah. So when we came back, then obviously I had to kind of like cover those costs and whatever.
Obviously, before you do anything.
And my house as well, you know, it's like it was good to just cover some bond months and what.
Yeah. Was it and you don't straight or was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I was about to ask.
Because
yeah.
I remember Manga from my big brother when he won his million, he got like 600,000. He took a screenshot, put it on Twitter, was complaining. Yeah.
It gets tagged.
I think he had a budget and stuff.
Nah, so from the production company side and Clover side, what they did was then so it's actually 1.4 something.
Then they cut the tax.
Yeah, and then what you get is post-tax.
Oh, that's nice.
Great. Brilliant.
Yeah. But also, it's very good for them to do that because maybe they don't want the Mandla backlash.
Yeah.
So.
That's dope. Anyway, we're going to play a game. It's called One Must Go, ne? I'm going to give you two artists, One Must Go. You're a chiller. You know this game, ne? Are you ready? Okay, here we go. Blackie Lucas Raps.
Lucas Raps.
Must Go. Ha!
I don't know him very well.
For real?
But I'm a fan of Blackie.
You like Blackie?
Yeah. So I don't know Lucas Raps quite well. From even his music, I don't know. Not personally. Yeah, I don't know his music, but I'm a fan of Blackie's.
Yeah. Which song by Blackie have you heard? Because he's done a couple.
Sigalikeke. I think Siga's going to be the biggest record that he's ever going to have. Yeah. Not ever going to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I predict Siga's going to be a... Actually, we must start a JR Predicts segment on
the
show for new music.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
And then we review it in a month.
Brought to you by Five.
Brought to you by Five.
Yes, you know? I like
so
that.
I'll talk to the partners at Five and we can see what we can do.
But it's going
to
cost you no more. Eh. We'll do it for free.
No, it's fine.
For guests.
Jared doesn't have a problem.
No, cool. I mean, we're running businesses here.
Yeah, we'll send you an invoice.
Yeah, but at least don't make it an expensive thing.
Make it
like an invoice where we both stand to benefit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got in-app marketing on Five, so we can also give you marketing on our fucking
brilliant.
You understand what I mean?
So let's love it.
Nah?
To the power.
What happens when black businesses
to the power
to the power of
Five.
But this is what happens when black entrepreneurs who are in charge of their own money and their own products do.
Yes.
So that you can negotiate and make a deal right now, right? Without having to consult, you agree, okay, sharp, we can do it, sharp. Clean, sharp.
Let's do it, yeah.
That's the power. That's why we want to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Because if we're working somewhere else, we wouldn't have the capabilities to do
no, that. No, I have to call someone first. I mean?
Who are you going to have to call?
You see?
No, I thought you.
No.
Okay, who are you calling?
No.
The guy from, your blesser from Superbad. So yeah, what are you saying, man?
I forgot.
No, you guys were playing one.
Yeah,
score.
So I said Sigalikeke. Sigalikeke.
MT versus Saudi.
Saudi must go.
Saudi.
Yeah.
Yo.
Is this game like a serious game?
Yes.
Yeah, but the options are pop.
Okay, bro. Give him one.
Ah, come on. Okay, I'll give you one. Dukes versus WHP.
Dukes must go.
Sure.
I'm sorry, maybe it's because I also am very good at separating my emotions.
Yes, you're very decisive.
Exactly.
KO Cuesta. KO'd him.
My brother. So I think I think KO must go.
KO, no ways. No ways. KO.
And the reason I say that is because I saw Cuesta more recent than I did KO. So I'm basing it on that.
No,
I saw KO a very long time ago.
Nah,
I saw
put Cuesta motions aside and who you saw.
No, but what are we talking about? Once I don't have options and I need stuff to cancel it out, I now need to call a friend. So calling a friend is now basing it on when last did I see this guy.
Sure.
So I'm telling that's what I'm basing it on.
What do you think about KO though?
I think he's phenomenal.
Fucking
I think the most consistent
dude
rapper we've had in the game over the past 10
Bro.
Years. Yeah. The most
By
consistent.
Far.
For me, rapper of the decade.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And I'll tell you why I say that. Because it's not even about accolade or whatever. I'm talking about finesse, cadence, raps, lyrics, all of that though. He can go pound for pound. And also from a commercial appeal situation. KO still today relevant. My brother, imagine me when I came in. Tear Gas had just had Chance. They came out the year before me, but I'm dead. They always alive. You understand? So it just goes to show you, you know, this guy is like really like when you think about consistency all the time, he's really there.
Shane Eagle, Aries.
Ooh, Shane's gotta go.
Shane's gotta go, man.
Yeah.
What happened between you and Shane? Are you guys cool?
Yeah, we're cool. I mean, we're cool. We weren't cool for a while.
Who would want to be cool with you, bro? I mean, you're out there swiping bills.
No, but a lot of things happened from an employee perspective. So, you know, and I just felt like, you know, so I hired someone to take care of that, of Shane for me from a
few weeks. Oh, you signed him?
We were working with him.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, cool. Dope,
so I had someone to look after his portfolio, like Shane and whatever. And I'd like, you know, I think, you know, that guy might have used that relationship to extract him from the situation and
start
something else.
Oh,
that's
I see.
What I believe.
I
believe that, you know, he had some conversations with Shane. I mean, we released "Look at My Neck," "Look at the Size of My Neck," way of the first single. You know. So. And from that, like, he was growing into who he is today. He had done like Cutting Corners and like songs that would bring out his real shit. You know what I mean? And yeah, so something changed there. But we're good now. I mean, we met at Rocking the Daisies 2 years ago or so. We had a conversation. I mean, it was quite awkward, I think, for both of us. I won't say just for him, because he was sitting right there. and I was sitting here and we're in the same section.
Yeah.
You know, but I could see him and he wasn't okay. You know what I mean? And he got up and he came and he sat and he was like, you know, we spoke because I mean I know him personally. I know his family. You
okay.
know, he's I think his pops is late now and whatever. You know, like so he knew that there was a lot that I could connect with him with at that time. That was a conversation that we had to have, and we had that conversation, and we you know we sorted it out, and yeah, still love him to bits.
Dope, man. Yeah. Alright, last one. Because I finally one must go.
Wow. Both must die.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah. They must go, they must die.
No, both must go. Sorry. No, not in a bad way. I don't know he's this song.
Yeah.
But again, like I'm, you know, maybe he's a serious rapper, but I'm also not quite as in tune
with
the hip hop as I used to be.
Yeah. AKA Casper?
Obvious.
Yeah, Casper's got to go.
Casper,
it was obvious. Come on,
it's not.
He wrote songs with AKA,
but it's not.
He wrote songs with Casper.
I wrote the song with Casper as well. We did Way Up together.
Yeah,
but which was also a big hit.
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
So I've had hits with both guys.
Exactly.
But I feel like you're closer to AKA. It's just from look outside looking in.
But also, like I like the work ethic, the way that Forbes works, the effort that he puts in, like
the catalog,
you know, he's meticulous, he's very pedantic about what he wants,
perfectionist,
like, you know, all of those things are things that I've got to respect. So yes, because I've got a view into the back side of the curtain, or the other side of the curtain rather, like I know what goes into what. I don't have that view necessarily with Casper. So I don't, like, I can't just base it on one thing. Yeah.
Awesome.
Who else?
No, that's it.
Mac
that's
G
all
and
I got. So, Mac G more flavor because we both interviewed you.
No, you Mac G must go.
Between Mac G and who?
More flavor.
Oh. Mac G must go. I'd rather more flavor's gonna play our songs on me. We're gonna make money. Oh.
I'm joking.
Rock the girls. Hey, what's Rock the Girls about?
Ah, it died with your career.
I'm joking.
I'm kidding, man.
Oh, man. I love this.
Just in closing, man, what do you want to be remembered as? I always ask everyone this.
Yeah, I think for me, man, it's just someone who's made a difference. I want to be remembered as a... more than just a musician, but someone who's made a difference, you know, to the continent, and someone who's made a difference for the South African entertainment space, the arts and the cultural space, you know.
Yeah.
And not a difference in the sense of like something light, but a huge impact.
Mm.
I mean, we've launched, you know, Africa's first mobile distribution app. You know what I mean? That is a big achievement for an African-based startup. You know what I mean? And there's nothing, it's something to write home about, you know. Every time I get on calls with people and whatever, and we have to talk about this business of Five, I understand the big impact that it's got globally, you know, from an African context. You know what I mean? So for me, that's what I want to remember it. Remember
Shit.
That. As someone who's made a difference through a large impact that has uplifted and changed how the world views Africa as a whole.
Shit, I can't leave this interview without asking you what happened to Feel Good Sessions, man.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know about that. Oh, it was fucking dope, bro.
Yeah.
Me and my woman used to love that.
No,
it stopped.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, it stopped, man.
It stopped a while ago. I mean, we look, and the thing is, like, it didn't stop. It's just, and I always say this, people tweet me all the time and ask me, and I always say, this thing costs money to make, you know. It's a very expensive exercise, you know. The musicians who play the instruments, there's four of them.
So you have to pay them.
They have to get paid.
Did you pay the artist?
The instruments. So we never paid the artist because, you know, it's optional. It's like you want to come through or you know. And another thing is, like, also we had an option to do a Feel Good Live sessions, right? But the reason we couldn't do it is because we want to be able to pay artists during this tough time.
Got you.
So a stipend. It might not be your normal 100,000 that you charge, but here's 15-20 as a stipend that we can afford.
Yes.
And that stuff needs money.
Yeah.
So, you know, our let's say expenses are quite high, and there's we can't afford to carry that risk at the moment, because in the beginning we could carry that risk, you know. So like a couple of guys coming through together, I've got this idea, let's do this. Oh, okay, shit. Oh,
because the first season you shot with your money, man.
Yeah, like we pitched in, you know, came through. And the thing is, like for me, it's that on the first season, it was. You know, and it came from a real place.
Yeah.
Just like your podcast came from a real place. Yeah, yeah. It came from a place of like frustration. It came from a place of boredom. It came from a place of unemployment for you. You know, and through that you created what you wanted to see. What you thought you wanted people to see.
Amazing.
Yeah. You
know what I'm saying?
So that's what happened. It's like, you know, so we can carry the cost of doing something in jail for the fun of it. But once that thing starts becoming commercially, once you start adding a value to it, because, you know, when you were doing your podcast, you didn't add a value.
100%.
You know, when you start getting a sponsor or you started selling ad revenue, you started getting money in the bank, you could create a valuation of the business.
100%.
And once you've created a valuation of the business, it's a mental thing. It's like, we can't go back there. So fine, maybe season one cost us 100,000 rand to do.
Sure.
Okay, but this one is going to cost us 4 million.
Ah,
and there's no changes to it. And that's based on value. You understand what I mean? Because season one, we're using a small little GoPro that was sitting there. Sometimes it would fall. Now we're using four cameras. We're stationing them like this. We're renting this equipment. All of this stuff is coming at a cost.
Mm.
And that cost is creating the value of the business.
But you had sponsors, man.
Yeah, we did a season with Mattel.
Mm.
It's not that we don't have a sponsor or whatever. It's about having the right one as well.
Ah, I get you.
Remember that even the season with Mattel wasn't as great of a season as season one.
Mm.
The music and artists and everything was still good.
Mm.
But because you have a sort of like a brand attached to it, people feel like now it's becoming over commercialized and whatever. You understand what I'm saying? But, you know, it still did well in that space. So for me, it's like, you know, we need to pick the right brands, you know, to partner with. So anyone can come and say, let's do this, but we need to have the right, guy. Yeah. So we'll come. And I mean, you guys make enough money from Grandeur and make enough money from YouTube and Google AdSense that you can pay us. And now Patreon.
100%.
So please give us you know, a couple of hundred thousands for one episode.
100,000?
Yeah.
Which one is this one?
You figures.
This guy likes to act very poor.
You think the podcast was 100,000 to just...
Oh, brother, he's parked the Porsche outside.
Ay, that's not mine.
Stop lying to the people. So, I mean, you can afford 100,000, my brother. You understand?
I wanted to ask you, who was your favorite session? Your favorite one?
My favorite one...
I liked... what's her name? Shikana. Shikana was dope, yo.
Mine was... who was it? Oh, man.
Strava?
Strava was good. And Strava was amazing. Strava has a personal one for me because I was in Cape Town. And so I've got this director's chair that's got JR written at the back.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it sits there and it's my chair.
Yeah.
And I was in Cape Town. And even when I'm not there, no one is allowed to sit on it.
Yeah.
You know, so I was in Cape Town having meetings and they had to put the laptop and put me on FaceTime so I can watch Java. So all Java could see was my face. You know? Yeah. The part that he says, hey, that's JR. And then they show me on the laptop. They say, yeah, it was Java. But I had to be present for every part, you know, of the show. So Java's one is got a close, like, it's close to me. But I think also, I think from a music part, I think Kid X had some nice music.
Kid X?
Yeah. Wow. He had some nice music there, you know, because I never really saw X performing in that light.
Mm.
And when I heard the music that he was, like, his music was working out so well with the keys and whatever at that point, I was like, wow. It's
Amanda
dope.
Black as well.
Amanda Black was also dope. Amanda Black was very, very nice. But all of them, man, like, I really love. But my favorite one, to be quite honest, is episode one.
Yeah.
It's my one.
Your one?
Yeah.
Shit.
Because my one is the one that set the benchmark for all of it. My one is the one that's most authentic. My one is the one that, you know, that.
Fuck, I haven't seen that one. I must go back.
No, go back and watch it. I think for me, that's the best Feel Good Life session. I think it's one that, you know, that even I look at and I'm proud of. And I've done three of them.
Yeah.
I've done one. The first one, I did a collaboration one where I did all the songs that I've collaborated on.
Don't
and then I did one for my new album, What a Life. But my first one is the one that I love the most.
JR, man, we love you long time, man. Thank you so much, bro.
Yeah, bro.
I've known you for so long. This is the first interview you do. Hey, how crazy.
This is the first one I do with you.
Yeah, I never did one with you on radio.
We do one.
You used to do with more
flavor. We do one at 947, didn't we?
Aye. Were you at Joburg Day or something?
Nah, but then you were also like here. Now things have changed. The meek shall inherit the earth. Funny how the tables turn, my father.
Yeah, podcast and chill.
That time, my brother, you are untouchable. I best him, my brother. Seriously, with his headphones. You couldn't touch him, my brother. Why were you doing this?
Make sure you support the channel by joining our Patreon page for exclusive content, behind-the-scenes content, and a whole lot more.